welcome to season two of What the Batch.
I don't think that's how this works.
I mean, it's a whole new season of Bachelor-related stuff, so I feel like, effectively, this is season two, episode one. Also, that will help me keep in mind what episode number we're at, because I've already forgotten in the most linear sense of what this is.
It's episode 12.
Season 2, episode 1.
Sure. Great.
If every other Bachelorette podcast has already switched their numbering, which they have, then I feel like we might as well do the same thing in that regard.
You're the expert, so whatever.
I don't really know how to dive in to discuss what happened this week for a myriad of reasons. Last week, I promised a new format, exciting guests. We have literally none of those things today.
I am shocked that here in season two, we're still working on these things.
I'm going to say that I did reach out to a couple people, couldn't make the timing work for this week, but that doesn't mean that we won't in future episodes. But also, I flirted with the idea of trying to call into you from New York and record this live as things were happening and realized very quickly that I hate Skype and that wasn't going to happen.
Okay.
So we're doing this on Thursday night. At this point, 4 full hours of Paradise have aired this week.
Okay.
And the reason I don't really know how to dive in and recap that is, one, 4 hours is a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, even when Bachelorette did 4 hours in the middle of its season to accommodate the 4th of July holiday, it wasn't so disparate, and there wasn't so much to pull apart. Like, I kind of ran through that. I was like, all right, let's...
Wasn't that when she just went on a series of dates and they were all kind of boring?
Exactly. And originally I thought, oh, we're going to do 2 episodes in 1 week, and then I watched them both, and I'm like, never mind. Like, I can probably run through this in about 5 minutes longer than I would an ordinary episode of this podcast. But this week, well, let's start with problem number one. We got a whole season of cast members I'm going to refer to, and I don't feel like you're going to know who they are.
This has not changed from any other episode of this podcast we've recorded.
By the time we got to the end of Rachel's season, we at least had, like, identifiable factors as to who these guys were.
There's Trouble.
Trouble. Who, Brian.
Not Trouble.
Peter.
Also not Trouble.
I mean, Eric, I think we were identifying as, like, worried about how much she was serious about him for most of the season. And then we had Dean, who managed to...
Deany baby.
Just be Dean. Like, he rose above by being the most followed person on social media. And a genuine delight. Dean's back for Paradise. So at the very least, we have one familiar person for you to, like, sort of know who I'm talking about.
Okay. Deany baby.
And Raven, which is...
I don't know who Raven is. I know you talk about her frequently.
Well, you watched enough of Nick's season. I feel like...
Did I?
You were at least around while I was watching enough of
Nick's
season.
That doesn't mean that I'm paying attention, committing anything to memory. Don't accuse me of these things.
Well, Raven's the first one into Paradise, but before we can actually have bodies walk through the door, I need to make it clear to you that the framing device that the producers thought was most wise was opening on a desolate beach in the middle of Mexico, and one man sits alone thinking about how it all went wrong, and that man is Chris Harrison.
What has my life come to?
Because when all 50-some-odd producers put their heads together, they thought, well, let's open with Chris really, like, forlorn on the beach. Pan in real fast, as he then reveals, it's been a rough time for me.
Did he get divorced?
No. The scandals that have rocked the Paradise headlines have really also rocked Chris to his core. Because, yes, Chris, let's make this about you more than anything else, and how much this potential rape scandal has really affected you personally. From this framing device, we then have Chris tell us, but we're going to go back, and we're going to see it all from how it began. We're going to see those first 3 days before production shut down, and we're going to see the beginning of romances blossoming, and things going awry. And we're going to get a clearer picture of how things turned out the way that they did, both in the media and for our couples.
I feel like this is all a gigantic lie.
In which respect?
Just he's making shit up. It's not what actually happened.
Well, I texted you from the other side of the country because I was watching this utterly shocked by then what happened next. Uh-huh. That framing device alone is so tone deaf.
Yeah, no, it's bad.
It just shows a lack of understanding about exactly why people were outraged. And even if there was no misconduct, which I think at this point we've decided there was no misconduct.
I think you've decided that.
The outside panel decided that.
Oh, yes. The outside panel. Who are they?
Warner Brothers hired a private investigation company to come in and watch all the tapes and interview people and go down to Mexico for 3 days where they had the cast sequestered in hotel rooms that were not the Paradise hotel rooms. Like, they...
Without free booze.
Yeah, they did their due diligence here, as far as I'm concerned. And at this point, DeMario's done a 4-hour tell-all with E! News. And Corinne has fired Marty Singer and walked very quietly away from the allegations she was once making. And instead filmed an interview, one-on-one sit-down with Chris Harrison. So...
The pinnacle of journalistic integrity, yeah. Right there, and asking the hard questions.
So that hasn't necessarily aired yet, but we're at a place where I feel confident being like, the misconduct allegations are in the past. Having said that, to turn them into sheer sort of fireworks and entertainment, like entertainment fireworks, that's really the best way I can put it, is bad.
It's gross.
But... Now we flash back 2 weeks.
Oh, boy.
And the way that the rest of day one is then edited is equally tone deaf. Because we see DeMario, we see Corinne, we see them meeting, we see them drinking a little bit. Everyone's sort of laughing at them drinking. We see them in the pool. We don't even see them make out. We see them in the background of shots. Mostly anything salacious was completely edited around. And look, I know they're never going to show DeMario eating Corinne out on the side of the pool. Like, that wasn't so going to happen. Okay? One, because this is the Disney company and it's broadcast television. And two, because they made it very clear that anything that was part of the hardcore investigation misconduct element was not going to be shown on national television. And I respect that 100%. But you know that they had footage of the two of them at least making out. And they don't even show that. So, to me, watching it, I didn't realize we were done with day one. Until I saw people waking up. And I was like, oh, we're on day two already. We have just skipped over all of it. You don't even really see the two of them belligerent. Which we know very clearly happened. Right. Like, these two people were drunk. Drunk enough that he couldn't get hard. And drunk enough that... Like, both of them the next day were like, oh man, we have, like, hangovers. And they don't really show them saying that, although they've both admitted to having, like, terrible hangovers and feeling kind of sick the next day. Like, we go right into day two, and we don't really see a ton of Corinne and DeMario. Like, they just don't really show the two of them, even though they're there, because they were there right until day three when this thing got shut down.
So they're cutting around them?
They start cutting around them.
Huh.
And then it becomes a question of why even show that footage?
Yeah.
Why not throw out 3 days worth of footage and just say, look, we decided that anything that was filmed prior to the allegations really wasn't worth putting out there, and we're going to start fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, understand that start fresh is relative because these people have spent time together and they know each other, and we're reticent of that, and we're going to dive in and honor that idea without trying to dance around what came before. No.
Why would they do such a thing?
It's very, 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 very odd to watch. And I watched it because I was home. I watched it with both of my parents. And it was very funny for both of their reactions because I finished the whole first 2-hour episode. And my mom was like, so wait, when did the misconduct happen? And by the end of that second hour, like, cameramen are putting their cameras down and yelling, like, cut, because the producer's telling them, we can't film anymore. So to the normal eye that's watching it for that moment of, like, oh, where was the thing that even elicited this shutdown? You wouldn't know. You wouldn't see anything like that.
Interesting.
More than that, though, every member of this cast has pretty much said, before she even went after DeMario, Corinne made out with 3 to 4 other men.
And didn't show any of that?
And no, we don't see her make out with a single person, including DeMario, in the 2 hours that they showed on Monday night that she was in.
So what was the point of the whole first episode?
To show the burgeoning romances between the other people that were there, so that when they come back from their hiatus and those romances have advanced or not advanced, like, there's the foundation that's laid.
Okay, that seems like you could have done flashbacks or something.
100%. Most of those first 2 hours, I think it's largely that they went on dates. They had 2 dates, and they wanted to make sure the dates got shown, because if they're going to lay out the money for those dates, although I can't imagine very much money.
Isn't that why you go to Mexico?
Yeah. Well, one of the dates was so clearly filmed at the same location that they did a date last year that I'm like, okay, so you guys have a Lend-Lease deal with this location to come film there and support tourism in Mexico for no money. But I think that was part of it, and I think it was just a stubbornness on their part, and I think that they thought if they didn't show any of Corinne and DeMario, that would raise more questions, and I would argue that's correct, but I would argue that if you're going to show Corinne and DeMario, then show as much of it as you can show without violating their person. So to that end, show them getting drunk, like, show them wandering off to the pool, show them making out, and then have Chris Harrison be like, hey, we're not going to show the rest of this, because although, you know, the outside panel has decided that no misconduct happened here, this is also a family show. Have him, if he's going to have his serious moment of the episode, do it there. Don't pepper it in, because every time they went to commercial break and came back, we went back to Chris on the beach alone.
No, did he give a serious face?
To give the serious face, talk very, very, like, emotionally to the camera, borderline closed fist as he, like, looked up to the sky.
Wow. Okay, then.
So, you clearly want to elicit something from your audience. You clearly want them to go, oh my god, this was so troubling to the producers and to the other cast members. And
producers care.
Yeah. You know who this was most troubling to? Corinne and DeMario. So if you're going to tell me about how much this fucked people's lives up, at least show me the two people whose lives were most fucked up by the fact that you had a producer go rogue. And that's really the thing that they don't want to admit here. If we're saying that all the allegations were cleared, that people have walked away, that the cast are clearly sided with DeMario, that Corinne has pulled back and admitted that she was wrong to really, like, go as hard in the paint as she did, and she didn't report this herself when it happened, then what the show is failing to admit, but is somewhat public knowledge, is that one producer who wasn't on set on day one, or at least night one of day one, went rogue and filed a complaint with Warner Brothers without ever seeing the footage. And that's what fucked all these people's lives up. That one person deciding she was going to take matters into her own hands without ever looking at the footage herself to really go, oh, something bad happened here, or something bad didn't happen here. And you have to own that, like, if you're the show. You can't put this on the fans, and you can't put it on Corinne, and you can't put it on DeMario, and you can't put it on the rest of the cast, and you really shouldn't put it on the crew whose job was just to sit there and film things, and this is the same things they've been filming for 16 years without anyone having a work stoppage. You have to put it on that one person who, if she had been right, would have been the hero of the story. But because she was wrong, and because she'd never seen the footage, was absurd to make the complaint to begin with. It's just a, like, own that. Have Chris Harrison address that, instead of having him sit on a beach and editing around all the shit that actually went down. Now, in terms of what else they show over the course of the 2 hours, because this is a fun summer show.
Oh, I missed that memo.
Like, that's what made Paradise the best of the three in the franchise. And it's also what is probably, it's probably the reason that, like, this scandal happening on this of the three was the most detrimental and also the most easy to overcome. Because they're able to go, like, everyone's having sex on Paradise, so whatever, we can keep rolling. But, so that's the reason that it's the easiest to overcome, but also the reason that it's the toughest of the three to deal with is it's kind of hard to have fun and be kooky and want to laugh when you know that we're laughing around actual shit going down.
Right. Yep. A little reality check.
I can run through the cast. I feel like by the time we talk about them next week, you'll have already forgotten who's in Paradise. So it's probably more effective to just talk about the actual storylines that they're crafting.
Okay. Whatever you want.
Then being like, here's the person that walked in first, and here's the person that walked in second. I mean, Raven walked in first because...
That's how Raven do?
Because she's the star of the show. She was the star of the show from the moment that she committed to doing this show on Women Tell All, or after the final rose of next season. The minute she sat opposite Chris Harrison and said, yeah, I'll do it, Chris was like, high five, and all the producers were backstage being like, Raven's the star of Paradise. And I'm cool with that, because I am cool with all things Raven.
Yes, I've noticed that. Yeah. I don't know who she is, what she looks like, what she did. But I know that you're down with the Raven.
Raven has one of the most attractive voices on television.
Okay.
Just no holds barred. She had a frog in her throat this week because she got super sick in Paradise. And even with, like, I get a little congested and I'm like, oh, I sound horrible. Raven had a full-on, like, frog in the back of her throat. And I was like, I'm kind of still into this voice. Like, it's still kind of cute and weird in its own way. That's a powerful, talent to have.
Not one I would ever thought of, but yes.
So she made it very clear to Chris she's here to find love. She's very, very hopeful. They're all very hopeful. Everyone in this cast is very hopeful. Dean was the first man in the door.
Sure.
Because, again...
Follows.
Yeah, because in the same way that they knew that Raven was going to be the female lead, Dean was always going to be the male lead.
But did they hook up with each other?
No. Their narratives sort of diverge from that point. They, like, meet, they shake hands, there's a mutual attraction, but it's not... It wouldn't be good TV if those two people became...
The instant couple?
The instant couple, because then where are the other narratives to follow? You need... It's ideal if they each find somebody else, and then those are your alternating A and B stories. And thankfully, for the sake of the show, Christina is the second woman through the door. And Christina is a big fan of Dean.
Who's... should I even ask who Christina is? Do I care?
Christina is the Russian.
With a tragic backstory?
With a tragic backstory, who lives in Kentucky, and... is a spectacular beauty, so good for Dean. Yeah, I mean, if I was Dean, I would feel very, very lucky, though, that to be stranded, and I put stranded in quotation marks, on a gorgeous beach resort with Christina and Raven. And so for several, it looked like several minutes in live, like, the way that it was edited, but according to him, an interview he did, like, earlier this week, he was like, it was just kind of the three of us for, like, an hour and change. Mm-hmm. And he's like, they're best friends outside of this. Like, they became best friends on Nick's season. Like, they hang out in real life.
Awkward.
So I kind of felt like the third wheel, but I also felt like the prize. And it was a unique feeling for me, where I had both of those things going at once. And I'm like, Dean, I would love to feel that level of awkward.
Dean is living your best life,
yes.
Wes.
He is. And I don't think he appreciates it. After that, several more women through the door. Danielle Maltby, whose most recognizable characteristic, maybe to you, is that she was the nurse, the neonatal nurse from next season, who is the most age-appropriate for him, other than the woman he chose, and also was from his hometown, which is probably the reason she didn't get a hometown date, because he was like, I don't need to go back to Madison, Wisconsin. I'm very familiar with it.
I remember you mentioning something like this. Sure, go for it.
I'd love to see Danielle find love. I don't think it'll be on national television.
Yeah, not...
She doesn't feel like one of those people And I do believe that it's totally possible to find love on a show like this, and I think people will this season, and Evan and Carly found it last year, but I don't think Danielle is the kind of person that will.
Right.
She just is kind of guarded and potentially too nice for for television. She did get new boobs between Nick's season and this. She makes a point of saying she's not really sure what to do with them.
This is a real thing, though. Because when I stopped playing soccer for college is when I finally started developing. It's a real different having very small breasts versus big ones. You throw out all your shirts. It's terrible. Well, big adjustment period.
I think hers was an intentional decision.
It doesn't matter. It's still, it all amounts to change, and you have to figure out how to do that. And bras are so expensive.
Yes.
Especially bigger ones. So.
I guess that stands to reason. I've never really thought about that, but it is more material. So if you're paying per square inch of material, then sure.
I don't think that's necessarily how it works. It can be hard to find bras of certain sizes. They are not really standardized. We can have an entire podcast about the problem with bra shopping.
I would probably learn so much from that.
Probably.
But I don't know that people would be interested in hearing it. I would be interested in hearing it, so we can do that off of this. But, so Danielle shows up.
Iggy Pop.
I mean, Iggy should be somewhat memorable for you. Like, in one, you know, one because we...
Iggy is the one that you liked and then ended up being boring.
Iggy's the one that was, like, the tattletale. He ran back to Rachel about every single thing.
Like, her gay best friend.
Yeah. And as soon as he hits the beach and sees Dean, he runs right past all these women.
Just straight to Dean?
Right to Dean and picks him up and twirls him around like please a little boy at an amusement park.
Please tell me they played, like, the nice movie music.
Yeah.
And then slowed it down.
And they immediately then cut to Raven in an ITM being like, I'm so confused. Like, does he not understand what he's here to do? Like, he's here to date women, and he, like, runs to Dean and picks him up like he's never seen him before.
Incredible.
Among the other cast of characters who arrive, Jasmine, who up till this point's most notable characteristic was that she was the black woman on Nick's season who wasn't Rachel.
Okay.
I
vaguely remember you mentioning this.
Her goal with Paradise is very clear.
Mm-hmm.
If Raven is the ostensive female lead and Dean is the ostensive male lead,
she's the villain?
Jasmine will be the breakout star of Paradise. She will fight tooth and nail to get as much screen time as possible, and she will make you question by the end of the season, who was the real star of Paradise?
Okay. It's good to have goals.
And from day one, like, that is apparent.
Is she, like, playing it up, saying absurd things?
She's making out with dudes. Like, she's the first one to make out with somebody. She's the second one to make out with somebody.
Third?
I don't think she was the third. Hat-trick? She did not hat trick. But even in promos for, like, later this season, there's a glorious clip. And I can't wait to see how it fits in context, because out of context, it might be one of my favorite things I've seen in a Bachelor franchise promo, of her storming down the beach in Puerto Vallarta and turning to the cameraman, looking dead into the frame and saying, "You want good TV, ABC? Watch me give you good TV." And then turning back around and continuing to storm down the beach.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
She knows what she's here for, okay?
Good TV.
Yeah. She's there to give them the best, like, most climactic, dramatic season yet. She wants to fulfill the promise that Chris Harrison makes every year.
Hey, you know, when he's not holding up his end of the bargain, she's going to step in and do it.
Other faces. I mean, really, there's a lot of people you're not going to know, and a handful of people I don't think America's going to remember. Lacey Mark, who I mocked relentlessly during Women Tell All for pandering so badly to the producers to be included in Paradise, cashed her ticket to Paradise, and she is every bit as annoying in these first two episodes. You briefly sympathize with her because her grandfather passes away after night one, and she has to leave. But then, because of the nature of the time jump, after the production got shut down, she comes back when everyone else comes back and goes right back to being annoying. There's Saint Nick, whose real name is Nick Bennett. I don't remember his last name. He's the guy that dressed up as Santa on JoJo season of The Bachelorette as his limo exit.
I don't remember this, but sure. I believe it happened.
He comes back wearing a makeshift Santa beach outfit to remind people, because they wouldn't remember him otherwise.
So that memorable trick you had worked really well.
Matt from Rachel's season, who will go down as the guy that was pretty much edited out of the show, even though he made it to the top
six. He's one of the two ones who we'd never, like,
yeah, he's the one that Rachel told, you know, or said to, I think we would really succeed outside of this show if we'd met in real life.
Oh, no. Rachel.
He's there to find some love.
Some, though. It's a little skosh.
Ben Zorn, who's...
What a name.
From Caitlin's season, so we're stretching back now for him. He swore off this franchise and said he would never do another season of anything.
Sensible.
And then probably started to see his Instagram followers dwindle and realize it was time to come back. Derek from JoJo's season. There's really no definable characters.
<That's it. laughs>
Just, he looks like John Krasinski.
Okay.
The internet has decided he could play John Krasinski's brother in a film.
Does he want to be an actor?
I don't know that he does, but he does look a lot like him. That's his notable defining thing. He also cried a bunch on JoJo's season, where like most men didn't really cry.
For any particular reason?
He took the breakup really hard. Like, he thought he was going to get further than he did.
Okay. Life coming at you fast, man.
On the female side, I'm trying to think if I forgot anybody. I don't think I forgot anyone. On the male side, Vinny, who was on Bachelor in Paradise season 3 last year and who is fantastic, very, very funny. He's from Miami and he competed on JoJo season. He's the barber that gave all the guys haircuts on JoJo season.
You say that like I should remember that this happened.
And he found love last year in Paradise, but then...
Clearly...
Well, then she left him. He didn't want to date other people. He didn't want to see other people. Like, he met this girl on day one and was like, it's you and me. And they rode that for about half the season until some guy showed up who, he brought a lamp with him.
Lamp?
Yeah. Apparently he had gotten out of the limo on his season of Bachelorette with a lamp and said he wanted to shine a light on their love or something really dumb like that. This is only noteworthy because Paradise is known for its really funny opening credits where they, like, play on the history of the individual contestants, and...
Had no idea.
This year has Vinny karate chopping a lamp in reference to having lost out to the lamp man last year. It also has Amanda running from...
Hug and kiss?
A man dressed like pizza, because...
Is that a bad Chad reference?
No, it's a reference to the guy she got engaged to last year who moaned while kissing and ate tons of pizza and then emotionally abused her and her two children, and now they're not together anymore.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah. So she's back. Still the most attractive person in this cast. Still probably not well-suited to do this show. I just find it really hard to believe that any guy that's going to do... And this is the cynic in me... But any guy that's going to do Paradise is also going to be ready to be an instant dad. Unless they already have kids. If they already have kids of their own, then that's a different conversation. But Josh last year claimed to be ready to do it, and he put on a brave face, and they made it last way longer than I thought they were going to, but he was older. He was on the older side of things. A lot of these guys, like Dean's 26 years old. He wasn't ready to marry Rachel. He's certainly not ready to be a dad. And I think because Amanda's 27, she thinks maybe that's plausible. She makes a joke on the first episode that she's really only there to get on Celebrity Tinder because they denied her the first time that she applied.
Is that one of those jokes that you're like, it's not really a joke, though?
Yeah, there's probably more than a grain of truth to that. But they also denied me, and I won't even lie, I also applied to it.
Celebrity Tinder?
Yeah.
With your 500 Twitter followers?
I have 801 as of today. But No, the thing about Raya, because that's what it's actually called, is that they claim that they don't entirely base their algorithm and whether they accept people solely on your Twitter following or your Facebook following, your Instagram following. It's based on a full vetting process, and you're supposed to have references and stuff.
Why would you do this?
Well, I think the idea is that you're really going to be dating like a cream, like the cream of the crop. Like if you have been vetted and approved for it and you go through the whole rigmarole and so does these other people, then like those people are like a high quality offering. I did it mostly just to see if I would get through, because I had read a story about a man who had next to no social media presence, but who had high earning potential and who had an Ivy League education and beat the algorithm and got accepted and like found love on it. And I was like, all right, well, if this dude did it, then let me see if I can. I did not beat the algorithm. So I like to think that they fixed it in light of him and not that I just didn't have the same promise that he offered to their...
So you need all of that and a social media following. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I'm waiting for this podcast to take off. I really feel like the minute that happens, I'm going to be accepted into Raya.
You're going
to
open your email and be like, oh, I've been waiting for you.
I can say that that's the only one that I was waitlisted for, because there's several dating websites or dating apps where you have to like apply and be vetted. And if the one I was going to be denied to is the celebrity one, I feel a little bit better about that than some of the others. So that's a cast. And very quickly, you start to see the different storylines form. You get none of the Corinne and DeMario, as I said. But you do get Christina and Dean, which the first date card is...
Who's Christina?
The Russian.
Oh, okay.
They have been affectionately nicknamed Christina.
Oh, no. Internet.
They go on a date that is shown for all of 5 minutes and looks like cost about $7.
Mexico.
It involves them not eating dinner, because even though all of the Bachelor, Bachelorette, and Bachelor in Paradise dates include food, no one actually eats on them.
Oh yeah, we had that conversation.
Then mariachi band shows up. There's flamenco dancers. They make out while confetti pours on them from like a cannon. It's very strange. There's nothing really romantic about it, but Christina seems to really be about it. And Dean seems to be really about the fact that Christina's really about it. And again, you know, Dean is very relatable in this way, because I watched it and thought, this date does not appeal to me. But...
Oh, you would 100% do and have done things that don't appeal to you.
But if I was on that date with Christina, let's go.
You read Twilight.
I did read Twilight.
Because some girl was into it.
I did. It was not a good book.
We're all shocked.
But it was her favorite book.
Wes, don't date someone whose favorite book is Twilight.
I chalked it up to the fact that at that point she was 18 and I was 20. And
also... Don't date 18-year-olds.
Well, when I was 20, that's a 2-year age difference.
Don't date 18-year-olds. It has nothing to do with the age difference. It's everything to do with being 18.
I mean, I can't, with a straight face and any conviction, tell you that I wouldn't go on a date with an 18-year-old now, so...
No, I wouldn't believe you if you told me that. I'm still telling you not to do it.
I've just learned over the years that, like... The further I get away from 18, the less likely that's going to be a successful date. And I'm less likely to read Twilight now. Or
ever again?
Well, like, let's say someone came to me now and said New Moon is my favorite book of all time. I don't think I would read New Moon for a girl.
Wes, don't read New Moon for a girl.
I'm just saying.
Don't read New Moon for anybody.
I would read the New Moon Wikipedia page and really try to pass it off like I'd read New Moon.
Look, just read the, what's his name reads Twilight, so you don't have to. It's a great summary of everything, additional snark, very fun.
I don't know what you're talking about, so now I'm going to have to Google it.
Yeah.
But is it somebody I should know reading it?
I don't know why I can't remember his name. He started reading Twilight because he was
30-year-old gay man or in his 30s gay man. He knew it wasn't the demographic, but he was tired of all the different people fighting, so he was just going to write an unbiased synopsis of each chapter and just let it be. And so that would be out there in the internet. It takes him about 3 chapters to descend into incoherent rage at how bad the books are, and he does all of them.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. Well, one of his reviews is just an anger spiral. He just started drawing an angry tornado on page, and like he ripped the page. It's fantastic.
I feel like this guy could get on a celebrity Twitter. I mean, a celebrity Tinder.
Mark reads Twilight, so you have to.
So he probably has the following that I lack.
He's also gay, though.
I'm sure there's gay men on celebrity Tinder.
Celebrity Grindr.
There's a whole gay section of Tinder.
Oh, yeah, you can put...
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways.
There's a gay section of Bumble, which I didn't know at first, because Bumble, the whole conceit of it is, like, the woman has to message first. So I had to ask a gay friend, like, well, what is gay bumbling look like? I feel like that's, like, a pitfall, because...
Who has to go first?
Yeah. And he was like, no, either guy can go first. I'm like, so it's just Tinder. It's just Tinder, but you're, like, using Bumble. And he's like, yeah, but the selection of men... is supposed to be better. I'm like, no, it's definitely not. And then he started using it, and he was like, it's not.
I'm like, that's a lie.
I'm like, you guys have Grindr for a reason, okay? If there was straight Grindr, I'd be on straight Grindr. I probably wouldn't be on other apps at all. That's not a thing, and it never will be.
Okay, well, it's hot, so let's speed this up. We've been doing this for forever.
The other date from episode 1 is... So day 2 in Paradise... Robbie arrives.
Episode 2?
No, day 2. Robbie arrives. Robbie's most notable characteristic is that he looks like a human Ken doll. He has very manicured hair, and he was the runner-up on JoJo season of The Bachelorette. When you come into Paradise, you are given a date card. Because you start with a certain number of people, but then people will come in and go out. There are rose ceremonies. People get eliminated. Robbie gets the date card. He chooses to take Raven on the date.
Can Raven say no?
Yes. Okay. You ask, Robbie goes around and meets with a couple different girls, decides he wants to offer to Raven. They have a mutual history in that they're both from the South. That was his rationale. And that they both were the runner-ups on their respective seasons, so they know the crushing pitfalls of being the last one standing and then getting kicked off.
A single glistening tear.
They go jet skiing.
Okay.
That's about as much money as Bachelor in Paradise is putting into the dates.
Jet skis, running like a jet ski for $50 an hour.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone jet skiing. I can afford it. It shouldn't be a date on Bachelor in Paradise. That's what I'm saying, you know? But Robbie is pretty pumped because he's in his element. He says it over and over again.
In his element?
I'm in my element right now. He also reviews 10 different pairs of board shorts before deciding the one that he's going to wear on the date.
Is he sponsored by these board shorts?
He asked them, this is the most, Robbie's going to be amazing on this season. Robbie was heinous on JoJo season, but this time around, he's really decided to ratchet things up a level. He's asked to be identified as Robbie Hayes influencer as his job title.
Wow.
And while on the date with Raven, he unironically talks about how big his social media following is and how much...
Guess hers is bigger.
It is. Because she's a woman. But also because Robbie kind of sucks. He started his own clothing line off of this show. It's like a workout-oriented, Under Armour-type clothing line.
Good for him.
I'm just saying, like, why not credit yourself as Robbie Hayes, clothing designer, right, or Robbie Hayes, entrepreneur? Why are you...
Small business owner.
Yeah. Influencer? Robbie... And then bringing that up on date 1 with somebody else from this franchise.
Such a douche move.
That's a douchey move to bring up if you meet a girl off of Tinder or Bumble. Or if you are at Malibu Wines and you try picking up a random chick, which Robbie has definitely done. But to do it with somebody from this franchise, who you have to know has a comparable fan base.
Right, if not a better one.
I really wish that we had seen him talking to Dean about it, so Dean could just be like, oh, that's cool. Like, I have double the amount of followers you do. I'm Deanie baby. Like, don't fuck with me.
I have an army.
Raven is super not into the date.
That doesn't sound like she would be.
She comes back. Sometimes the editing on the show is beautiful. And in this instance, I will give them all the credit. Because it's one of those scenes from... It's like a scene from Grease where it's like, tell me more, tell me more. All the guys are like, so tell me about the date. And Robbie's like, it went so great. I was in my element. Like, we talked about all kinds of great things. We talked about our, like, you know, shared heritage coming from the South. And we talked about, like, you know, my job as an influencer.
And everyone go, wait, 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 back up. What?
And they cut to Raven being like, it was kind of a terrible date. he cares more about his hair than I care about my hair. And I don't think I could date anyone that, like, is that sort of pampered of a man. He also has, like, a 12-pack. It doesn't really look human. I don't really think men need more than 6 abs. It just kind of seems like all he does is, like, Instagram and go to the gym. And I don't really think I could date somebody like that.
Insta and gym.
And all the girls are like, yeah, no, that makes sense. For the rest of the episode, they really talk about how all the other men feel threatened by Robbie, and none of the women want to fuck Robbie. Like,
oh,
it's that beautiful dichotomy of a man looking at him and being like, well, I want to have 12-pack abs.
Right.
Or I want to have perfect hair like that. Which I, as a viewer, I'm like, yeah, I don't have 12-pack abs, and I don't have, like, hair that is that quaffable. He also does seem like a douche, so I wouldn't want to be him.
Right.
But there's envious elements. But the women are like, no, there's guys here that are way more normal. I'd rather date, like, someone that is sort of down to earth. At the same time, Ben Zorn is also courting Robbie. I mean, yeah, courting Robbie. Courting Raven. So you begin to see, like, the seeds being planted of who's going to win Raven's heart, or at least win her rose for the first week. And although they don't get a date, the other sort of triangle that forms is a triangle between Saint Nick, Matt, and Jasmine, because Jasmine's going to get that screen time. Like,
oh.
Come hell or high water.
Yeah, well, engineering a love triangle is a good way to do that.
Nick, who again is very forgettable, comes to Jasmine and says, hey, the only reason I agreed to do this show is because I knew you were going to be here. Which is a ballsy move, but I also really respect it. Like, if that's how he thought the best way to get to her was, like, he knew she was going to go to Paradise, so he wasn't going to be able to date her before Paradise because she'd leave to go do it. Which it seems like she was pretty stubborn and pigheaded about being on Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Then why not go to Puerto Vallarta for 15 days and try to woo her and, you know, for free?
Yeah.
He then makes the rookie mistake of being the guy who gets too drunk on night one.
Oh, no. Don't be that guy.
Yeah, for all the talk about how drunk Corinne and DeMario were, Nick was drunker than both of them. I mean, we didn't see how drunk Corinne and DeMario got, but I don't think you could be more drunk than Nick was.
It's not possible.
He sat down to have a conversation with Jasmine and, like, couldn't make sentences, and she was like, please don't ruin. Like, it was good. You were good this morning. Just go to bed. Like, and then as soon as he goes to bed, she goes and finds Matt and is like, let's get in the hot tub and make out. And Matt's like, all right. So they do that. Now, here's where the dividing line, you know, starts, because it's supposed to be the rose ceremony. The rose ceremony is going to happen. All of a sudden, all the cameras get put down. Production's yelling at everyone to stop. And that's the end of episode one. What a cliffhanger. Where is Corinne and DeMario? What's going to happen?
Because are they going to revisit it in the second?
The second episode does not begin with Chris Harrison on a beach.
Oh.
It begins with Evan and Carly's wedding.
What?
So, Evan and Carly met on Paradise last season. We've discussed them.
Yeah, she didn't like him, and then she was like, I'm kind of into him.
Yeah, again, it's a weird choice, so we come up on episode 2 with Evan and Carly's wedding. I don't really have a ton to say about that, which is good in terms of keeping the time of this podcast down. But it takes up 45 minutes of the 2 hours for night 2. And they had recorded Evan and Carly's wedding not knowing if they were going to come back from the shutdown. Because it occurred during the shutdown.
I thought you meant if Carly and Evan were going to come back. And I was like, what? Are they looking for a third?
So I don't know what they would have done if the show hadn't returned. Like, if Paradise hadn't resumed filming. If they just would have aired it as its own standalone special. It doesn't really seem like it has the legs to be its own standalone special. Last year, when Jade and Tanner got married after Paradise, like, you could tell that ABC and the Bachelor franchise were very invested in Jade and Tanner. Like, they were the couple that they were going to hold up and be like, they didn't come off The Bachelor, they didn't come off The Bachelorette, but they might be the best couple that this franchise has ever produced.
The Bachelor in Paradise win.
And they also had their baby girl today, and she's very cute. They have not revealed the name yet, but they did, like, tweet out a photo, or they gave a photo to People magazine. And unsurprisingly, two beautiful people made a beautiful baby. So congratulations to them. I don't feel like Mike Fleiss and Alon Gale and Mike Mills and everyone cared as much about Evan and Carly. I just feel like it was one of those things where, like, oh, yeah, you guys are going to get married? Okay, we'll pay for it. It shouldn't cost. It won't cost that much. It's a kind of sparse, beachy wedding in Mexico during the daytime.
Did other Bachelor people show up to it?
Yes. Nick and Vanessa were there. Caitlin and her fiancé, Sean Booth. Ashley I, who they spelled her name wrong in her ITM discussing the wedding.
Oh, no. How do you do that?
It's not a hard name to spell. It's Ashley. Do you know how many Ashleys this show has had? But also, she's done 3 seasons of your franchise.
Don't you already have these pre-made?
Not counting her guest appearance on the Twins spinoff, which, if you did count, she's appeared on 4 different shows across this franchise, and yet they spell it A-S-H-E-L-Y.
Is she L-E-I-G-H?
No, it's A-S-H-L-E-Y.
Oh.
And she didn't notice it at first until someone pointed it out to her on Twitter, and then she was like, I weep. I weep at the fact that I didn't even think about looking at the Chiron to be like, did they spell my name right?
I mean, why would you?
Yeah.
There's somebody whose job is literally to get that shit right.
So she's there. Wells takes a break from being the bartender. Wells is the bartender in the season of Paradise because Jorge had to go pursue his dreams.
What does that mean? It sounds so much more interesting than the show.
He tried to explain to the cast. He doesn't speak English very well.
Okay.
But from what I could tell, he's starting a tour guide business called Jorge's Tour Gaze.
Oh, I want to go on this. It sounds amazing.
I have a feeling that we will see him again at some point during the season for one of the dates. Like, he'll be the tour guide on one of the dates.
How could we not?
But in the interim, Wells agreed to come back and be the bartender because it worked with his radio gig that he does where he, like, could radio in the morning and then hang out. It's not a great gig, honestly. I don't really know why he agreed to do it because he's not allowed to go on dates. So it's like being in Paradise for 15 days and then not being able to date anyone and kind of having to actually do bartender duties. He said in a podcast, he like went on Ashley's podcast to talk about it this week and was like, yeah, no, I actually had to clean dishes and like really to make drinks. It's not just like something where I'm doing that on when the camera was rolling.
Okay.
That's a shit job.
Yeah.
Like, I guess he just thought it'd be fun and then probably found out that it was stupid once he was down there, but he was at the wedding. He was actually one of the groomsmen because he and Evan both live in Nashville. Evan and Carly all live in Nashville, and he and Evan got very close during JoJo season when they were both competing and then again on Paradise last year.
Okay.
And Jade was one of the bridesmaids because Carly had been a bridesmaid at Jade and Tanner's wedding. The twins are there. I need you to know that they're there.
Noted.
They don't get a lot of screen time. It's the most problematic thing about the 45 minutes. If you have Haley and Emily, and you don't show Haley and Emily, except for one very, very brief ITM, you have failed this, like, city.
Missed opportunity.
they're the queens of in the moment interviews. I would have watched a full unedited look at Carly and Evan's wedding narrated by the twins. Like, that probably would have been better than what we actually got. They also use part of the 45 minutes for Chris Harrison to revisit all the successful marriages that the show has produced.
The show is in The Bachelor in Paradise? Or no, just the franchise. Okay.
Which they noticeably do leave out. Last week we talked about how they didn't seem to care, or like I had been told that they did not care and had written off the one couple whose name I'm for now forgetting. It's Desiree. Desiree and Chris. They don't show that. And people online were like, well, they didn't film their wedding. They didn't agree to be filmed for television. So really what they were showing is all the weddings that had agreed to be filmed.
Yes.
It's kind of an amusing montage just because you get to see, like, the first one, which was Trista and Ryan. Trista being the first bachelorette ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's not in HD. And it's...
Oh, yeah. It's always weird to now go back and watch things. And you're like, oh, this was before HD. What?
So, like, in an HD widescreen television, like, it's letterboxed. And, like, yeah. It looks really bad. And she looks like... Considering that happened in the 90s, not even the 90s, that happened in the 2000s. It looks like a 1980s wedding. Like, her hair, the dress.
Oh, no.
It did not age well.
Ouch.
She's aged well, because I've seen photos of her and Ryan and their kids now in 2017, and she looks younger now than she did at her wedding.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was amusing to watch. And I hadn't seen most of that. I had seen bits and pieces of Jade and Tanner's wedding, but that was really the only one. So it was interesting to see some of the others, like Sean and Catherine's or Trista and Ryan's. From there, because where else do you go? We return to Paradise the same way the cast returns to Paradise.
On a plane?
No, like we get, it's like, okay, cameras have started rolling again. They have come back to Mexico from wherever they've been. We sent them home. And there is a, and I shit you not, fireside chat with Chris where he talks to them about what's okay in Paradise and what's not okay.
So we're watching them get their sexual harassment seminar?
It is a 30-minute sexual harassment seminar. And if you thought Chris Harrison alone on the beach looking forlorn on episode one was tone deaf, this bullshit was enough to make several different people who recap this show for money stop their recaps and be like, no, I won't recap this anymore. Like, that's how fucking tone deaf it was.
Wow.
They try to make the... They jump all over the place. First, he asked them how the scandal affected their lives.
Oh, absolutely not.
And tells them that it was really hard for him and for the crew.
Oh.
Various cast members then play the game of being like, well, you know, the whole time we were home, we were just worried about the producers and people in the crew who, like, expected to make money and weren't making the money that they were going to make. It's like, let's rehab the image of the people behind the scenes and use the cast to do it. Then, because Taylor doesn't drink, Taylor being the girl who's, like, constantly talking about emotional IQ on Nick's season.
Oh, the one who was the actual villain?
Yeah, she doesn't drink, and so they use her to be like, look, I've never been... once asked by a producer, did I want a drink? Like, I made it clear in my initial interview to do Nick's season that I don't drink, and they've always been understanding of that. So if you choose to drink on this show, that's your own fault. And if you make mistakes when you're drunk, that's your own fault.
Whoa.
And then Chris is like, well, that's great. Let's talk about slut shaming then, since you've walked us down that, like, that road. That's the way that he segues. I'm not exaggerating.
Oh.
And Danielle Maltby's like, well, you know, I'm glad that you brought up slut shaming, because I feel like a lot of people really quickly jumped on Corinne and made this a slut shaming thing. And it really shouldn't be that. Like, that's not what it is. And Chris is like, no, of course not, Danielle. Of course. That's not, I'm not implying that. I'm not implying that. Are you implying that? Are other cast members implying that? Is anyone here implying that we're slut-shaming Corinne? Because we're not. That's not the kind of thing this show does. And okay. Just that alone is kind of like, eh, I feel like you're slut-shaming.
Like, I feel like you're protesting a little too much there, buddy.
And Raven and Jasmine feel the need to, like, step in at that point and be like, look, we caught a lot of flack because we didn't stand by Corinne, but we didn't stand by Corinne having nothing to do with who she made out with on night one or who she's had sex with or the fact that she had a boyfriend at home when she came to do this show and said she didn't. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't stand by her because she was making accusations that we were sitting there and seeing to not be true. Like, our bigger problem was that. And then Raven proceeds to be like, I've been raped. And so the reason I'm not going to stand by Corinne is because, like, that wasn't rape. And I saw it. Jasmine and I were sitting right directly off camera, which makes it even more problematic that they don't show any footage of that in episode one. If you're going to have these two women sit here and have Raven straight up say, I have been raped before. I know that that was not rape. But we're not going to see any of that footage. And we're not going to see Jasmine and Raven off like, right off, because you know there was a camera on them, too. It's not as if every camera was pointed at, like, Corinne and DeMario. So to not show any of that point of the night on, like, episode one makes the whole conversation even worse. Like, that whole idea of, like, let's do, like, the sexual harassment seminar and film it is a bad idea.
Oh, it's just, oh, oh.
But Chris is like, oh, my goodness, like, Raven, how brave of you to bring that forward. And she's like, well, I just want to say it because I worry that this conversation and the way that we're talking about this might dissuade women from coming forward in the future. Raven, if you know that that's where this fireside chat is headed, get out.
Yeah,
leave. Get out immediately. And she's like, and I just don't want that to be the thing. Like, I don't want that to be the takeaway here. Which then somebody brings up the issue of race. And this show is not prepared.
No, this show is just...
Like, oh. If we learned anything from Rachel's season, it's that it's not really prepared to deal with the pitfalls of, like, racial profiling and inter, like, race couples and...
Anything with nuance?
Again, like, Raven becomes the mouthpiece of the group and is like, look, where I come from, it's not common. Like, mixed race couples are not common. And it's something that even I had to get adjust to when I came out to California for the first time and started seeing it and then being on the show. Like, it's not that I'm against it. It's not that I have any problem with it. It's just when you've never seen it growing up, it's jarring at first. Mm-hmm. And I think to a lot of people, the Corinne and DeMario thing was jarring and it became like, oh, the aggressive black man and the white woman, and therefore people assume that he was in the wrong before they knew any of the details. And so, while I didn't necessarily love DeMario as a guy, I felt compelled to be like, whoa, whoa, guys, like, let's be clear about what happened here. And Chris Harrison is salivating like a fucking Pavlov dog, being like, okay, so now that we brought up race, do you guys...
Do my job for me.
Do you guys feel like the entire reason that the headlines got made to begin with and that the entire reason that we all look bad is because really America's racist?
I think that's what they call a leading question, Your Honor.
And a bunch of the cast are like, yeah, that's definitely what we think, Chris. That's definitely what we think. Diggy, in particular, is like, my big issue, Chris, is that I think y'all left DeMario out to dry.
Okay.
And it's hard enough to do one of these shows and keep a job. Like, I almost lost my job to come and do Paradise. I had to really, really, like, move heaven and earth to be able to be here.
Don't lose your job to do Bachelor in Paradise. Oh.
But for the rest of his life, anytime DeMario applies to get a job, they are going to Google him. And he's going to be accused of things that he did not do, and that accusation will follow him because you allowed it to and the show allowed it to. And Chris goes, well, ultimately, we proved that nothing wrong happened. We did the investigation, and we proved it. So, you know, that's not on us.
That's not how people act.
Then Chris says, now we're going to take a vote.
Oh, no, there's nothing here that you should be voting on.
And if enough of you vote no, you don't think we should reopen the gates to paradise, then we won't.
What?
But if you feel comfortable after having had this chat with me...
I feel more uncomfortable having heard that this chat happened.
And you think you're emotionally prepared to re-enter paradise.
Oh, dear God.
Then vote yes. No pressure. Now...
out of, I don't know, just in spite of it.
They've all been flown back to Mexico by this point. Like, who's voting no? If you've agreed to come back, like, Corinne and DeMario are not there. They've both not come back, right? If you've agreed to be flown back down to Puerto Vallarta, you're voting yes. So even asking that is uncomfortable because now it becomes this thing where, like, the whole cast is voting not on whether the gates of paradise should reopen, but on whether the producers were in the wrong at all.
Oh, that's so gross.
And it's like them all voting one by one for how great the producers are and that they are their friends. And with that, you know, let's kick back, you know, up into this the high gear of this fun summer show. You know, like, so you've spent 45 minutes on the wedding, 30 minutes on this. You now have 20 minutes left, you know?
Okay.
No, you have 40, I guess you have... You have 40. You have 45 minutes left to the show.
I'm high. I don't math.
Yeah. Give or take commercials, so probably closer to like 30 minutes. During that time, there's a lot of talk about how all the couples have grown while they were away. Now, what they're not saying is that for 3 days while they were in holding, as they were interviewed and whatnot, they were basically hanging out at the resort in Mexico, but not being filmed.
Okay. So, and just, like, living their lives.
Yeah, but probably getting closer than they ever would on camera because they could have sex without really worrying if anyone was going to film them and talk about things that they might not want on national television.
Sure. That tracks and makes sense.
Then they were all flown back to the States for 10 to 12 days.
For the interviews?
No, just because the filming had shut down and they didn't know if they were ever going to resume.
Oh.
So in, like, the instance of Dean and Christina, Dean decided to follow Christina back to Kentucky and spend 10 days with her in Kentucky.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, Taylor and Derek spoke every day via, like, Skype or texting and for 10 solid days after the 3 days where they were, like, having sex off camera in Mexico. So when you come back, these couples that feel like they should be really underdeveloped are suddenly, like, in a very different place than where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And they send Derek and Taylor on a date, and they're so far ahead of where everyone else is, ironically, like, in that they weren't necessarily together during the 10-day, 12-day break, but, like, they're a couple. By the time filming resumed, like, they are a couple. They look like they just want the cameras to go away so they can have sex. Like, they're in that point of the relationship where, like, that's all they want to do if they're going to be, like, in an island resort. So ABC and the producers throw them a bone and let them go on a date together and then spend the night.
Throw them a bone.
And let them spend the night in the boom boom room.
How kind and magnanimous.
Now, what we don't get to see is them consenting to camera that they want to have sex before they go into that.
Now leave.
Which is, you know, part of the new rules of paradise.
Okay. As outlined by Chris Harrison.
Yes, as outlined by Chris Harrison. Dean is not feeling it now that he's back in paradise.
Dean, baby.
He breaks, like, the episode more or less ends with him breaking Christina's heart, being like, I feel like you're going to give me your rose tomorrow, and, like, I'll accept it. But I don't know that I really want to be exclusive to you or that I think this is at the same place that you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Christina does not handle that well. There's crying.
Yeah.
There's like a little cursing in Russian. It's all very attractive to me. But it looks like a rocky road ahead for Dean as he pursues trying to date Christina and also other women.
But he got his rose. He stayed on.
Well, that's what this is all heading to, which is 4 hours, Alex. There was no rose ceremony.
Oh, your favorite part.
How are you going to show me 4 hours over 2 days and zero rose ceremonies? Beyond. That's so extra. That's so extra. The only other really noteworthy thing from the last 45 minutes or so is that Jasmine has come back to Paradise fully expecting to pick up where her and Matt left off. And Matt, I don't know what happened over the 10 days that they were away from filming, but he's come back deciding, like, I don't know if I really want to be with Jasmine. She might be a little bit too much for me.
Okay.
Which is very exciting to St. Nick, because he was like, that's the only reason I'm here. Like, I'm still only here for Jasmine.
I got a chance.
Do I win this love triangle by just, like, outlasting the other person?
I don't think that's how love triangles work, but okay.
So, it should be an interesting rose ceremony, because at and Lacey's back. And Lacey, like I said, I prefaced it before, you know, she comes back, and she didn't get the 3 days off camera, because she was gone dealing with her grandfather's funeral.
Right.
And so she never formed any connections, and she wasn't on the group chat text that they were, like, all on during, like, the 12-day break.
Uh-huh.
So she comes back, like, little orphan Annie, not really belonging, and, like, tries to, like, talk to all the guys who aren't nailed down to a girl already, and none of them seem that interested in her.
Poor Lace.
So I don't know where her rose will go. But for the most part, you can kind of look around and be like, I know how the rose ceremony is going to go at the top of Monday's episode. Derek will get Taylor's rose. Raven will give Ben hers, mostly just because between Ben and Robbie, like, Ben is the lesser of two evils.
That's how everyone wants to be known.
Christina will give Dean the rose because she's not gonna send him home. She wants too badly for him to stick around and realize that he's in love with her.
She can convince him.
Lacey, who knows? I don't know. Amanda was gonna give it to Alex. Alex isn't really worth talking about. He sucks. He's, like, really tiny. He's, like, a little midget. He's not an actual midget. That's offensive to actual midgets. He's just, like, a very short man with, like, a Napoleon complex. And he didn't seem to understand when Amanda told him, I'm going to give you the rose, but, like, as a friend, because I don't want you to go home. He, like, saw that as, like, he okay,
read into it.
Like, as a friend, in quotation marks. And she's like, no, as a friend. And he's like, yeah, okay, wink, wink. So I don't think he's going to get a rose now. I think she may actually give her rose to Robbie, just because Robbie seems to be way more understanding of, like, whoever this rose is.
It's a friend rose.
Yeah, whoever's, like, I'm not that, like, intimately interested in anyone that's here right now, and I got burned last year pretty badly after my engagement blew up, so I'm taking things a little bit slower this time.
A rough time.
Jasmine will give hers to Matt, even though he's kind of backing away now, which probably means that St. Nick's ass goes home, and the love triangle doesn't go the way that he thought it was going to for him. I think Iggy and Diggy both get cut next week. It'll be interesting to see who the women that come in next week are, though. That's the thing I'm most looking forward to, because I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think Danielle L. from Nick's season will be there based on promos, and that's really the only one that
I'm
I know.
I'm so excited.
Well, I mean,
I have no idea who she is.
They're all very attractive, but she's very attractive. And the promo shows her making out with Dean, so presumably we're headed towards, like, Dean really
getting his groove on,
getting in too deep, like, digging himself a really deep grave. Having said that, what I'll close this podcast out with is that there's a real possibility that Dean may not find love in Paradise simply by having too many options. He may, like, run through too many options in Paradise and then become the Bachelor. And I never really thought that they would do Dean as the Bachelor, and I've been saying that for a month now. But the execs at ABC and also the Bachelor producers have started to walk backwards from Peter this week.
Oh, any particular reason?
Well, if you're to believe reality, Steve, he said no. And rather than just gracefully accepting his rejection of being the Bachelor, they've decided to jump on the Rachel bandwagon and torch him in the media.
Okay.
So, like, Mike Fleiss, who's the EP creator of the show, like, tweeted out something to the effect of, would you really want a Bachelor who's not ready for commitment? I don't think so.
Wow. Oh, okay.
And
that seems kind of shitty.
And Chris Harrison wrote a blog post in which he said he's not convinced that Peter is Bachelor material.
Wow.
And somebody leaked to People magazine today that the producers thought he was a toxic contestant who never was there for the right reasons. And it's like, this is all in a span of like 1 week, guys. Be a little bit less transparent, please. Like, so I'm inclined to believe that he decided he did not want to do it. And, right, and rather than just letting him go off into the dark, you know, of night, they were like, no, we will light you on fire.
Okay, sure.
And
cool.
At that point, you may go with Dean just because, like...
What other choice do you have?
I still think Eric, Eric would make a wonderful Bachelor. Some people really want Wells. They think maybe the reason that they didn't let Wells date in Paradise and that he agreed to be the bartender, even though it's a shitty job, is so that he could be the Bachelor. But then...
It seems convoluted.
I just don't think that adds up. It doesn't... If you're going through a whole summer without really seeing Wells in a romantic light, that's not a great framing device for him to then become the Bachelor.
Okay.
You're like, oh, we're watching him for a whole, like, month and a half to 4 hours a week, and he's not really dating anyone. So now I really want to see him date somebody. It's not a strong sell. But if Dean messes up once, twice, three times with different women in Paradise,
yeah, you can't.
And cries a bunch, and then says, and is just like, this is so much for me. I don't know. I just want to find love so badly. You can spin that. You can spin that and make that into Bachelor material. It would be a very different season. Like, Nick's very self-serious, and Ben was looking for a wife. I mean, he blew it with Lauren, or Lauren blew it, I don't know. Like, he seems much more broken up by that relationship than she did. She's already on to the next guy, but I don't think Dean's very self-serious, and I think he is still kind of a kid at heart who just wants to, like, have fun, which probably makes him a bad Bachelor in certain respects, right. But would probably make for wonderful television.
Sure.
So that's the thing I'm going to really be looking for as we move through the rest of this season, kind of tracking to see how they edit for him in particular more than anything else.
See if they're aiming us in a certain direction.
Yeah. I mean, I started to see it with Nick last season. I said to you, by the second episode of Paradise, I was like, Nick Viall will be the Bachelor. And everyone that I said that to is like, there's no way. They have much better options coming out of JoJo's season. Like, just watch. Like, they're not giving him a hero's, like, narrative for no reason. Like, when the man was a villain on two different seasons of this show, and suddenly he is our de facto lead and hero, there's an ulterior motive there. And sure enough, you know, several months later, he's in a tux giving out roses, so... I could see something happening with Dean. Dean's been pretty adamant that he doesn't think he'd make a good Bachelor. But that could be like the George Washington effect of just like, I don't want to leave this country. Okay, I'll do it.
But also that sort of like, oh, no, me, never. And they're secretly like, yes, yes, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, he asked Ben Higgins on the Ben Higgins podcast, like, I just need to know, like, contractually, do you have to agree to propose? And that seems to be the overarching question for him, for Peter, for Eric, for all these guys that are like, well, we're ready to propose, but also like, do you have to?
Can we get around this some way? Get our power back?
And it's funny how hung up, I don't think anyone gets proposed. I don't think there's any proposals at the end of Paradise this year. Last year there was three. I haven't heard anything about proposals at the end of this season of Paradise. And they're probably going to spin that like, well, we had way less time to film, so there was less time for the relationships to form.
Also drama.
And proposals are less important for Paradise, although they are doing a live reunion finale thing, so I can see someone getting proposed to on that.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds appropriately cheesy.
But with The Bachelor, when the show first started, you didn't have to propose, and now so much of it is about proposals. So, although it may not be contractually obligated, I think, you know, if you're to believe this People magazine article today that was leaked from an anonymous source that's in no way, you know, a major executive producer on the show, their greatest fear is to get somebody like Juan Pablo or Brad Womack who refuses to propose as the next Bachelor. Okay, well, if you're saying that and you're saying that to People, then it's not contractually obligated, but it's contractually obligated.
Right, it's mandatory optional.
So these are the things to watch out for. Hopefully there are two rose ceremonies next week, at least. There's four more hours.
You're owed.
There's four more hours. There should be, for every 2 hours of television, one rose ceremony. This is my firm belief. So if we're getting four more hours next week, which we are, it's 4 hours a week from here until the second week of September, I think. There should be at least two rose ceremonies.
Okay. Noted. We'll keep score.
And with that, you can find me on Twitter. Help me get on Celebrity Tinder by following me at I Am Wesley.
I'm at Alexa. This is What the Batch, our intro music is Biking the Park by Viewers of Air. Our outro music is Already There by Josh Woodward. And there's another 4 hours next week.
4 hours next week, 4 hours the week after, 4 hours a week until the middle of September. Almost paradise. See you next week, guys.